supposed to be about the big Rabbanim from Eastern Europe. I forgot. Sam Soka was really from Western Europe. He was born in Frankfurt, and later in life, he became the rabbi in Hungary, and the end of his life in Pressburg. There is a book that's called Chut HaMeshulosh, which tells story is written by a grandson of the Chasam Sefer, son of the Ksav Sefer, who is the son of the Chasam Sefer. And he writes, it's called Chut HaMeshulosh. He writes about the three generations of in the family. Rabbi Akiva Eger was his father-in-law of the Chasam Sefer. Chasam Sefer had three wives. After the first wife passed away, he married the daughter of the Rabbi Akiva Eger. And after she passed away, he married a different wife. As it turns out, the Chasam Sefer was only 1 year younger than his father-in-law, Rabbi Akiva Eger, and he died a year after his father-in-law. They lived to the same age. And so in this book, the grandson of the Chasam Sefer writes stories that he heard of in the family. For many years, the book was assumed to be reliable and authentic. I don't know. Someone published another book where they claim that the sister of the author of the Chut HaMeshulosh says that her brother wrote a lot of exaggerations. But in the Chut HaMeshulosh, she has the following story, that when the Chasam Sefer was bar mitzvah, he said his own Dvar Torah, he prepared his own Dvar Torah. His father, his Rebbe, did not prepare it for him. He said his own Dvar Torah. And in the Dvar Torah, he quoted from a sefer that was written by an ancestor of his, I don't know, grandfather, great-grandfather, that's called Kos Yeshuas. Seder Nezikin is known as Yeshuas. The Gemara in Masechah Shabbos comments on the Pasuk, V'haya munisitecha Kos Yeshuas Chochmas Vadas, Yeras Hashem Hi Yotzorah. So the Gemara says, Amunis is a reference to Seder Zerayim, Itecha is a reference to Seder Moed. Choisin is a reference to Seder Noshim and Yeshua is Seder Nezikin. So I think there are two Svarim on Nezikin. One is called Kos Yeshuas, one is called Kosos Yeshuas. So one of them is written by this ancestor of the Chasam Sefer at the age of 13. He said over something from the grandfather and then he ripped it apart. He showed that it's wrong and then he gave his own pshat. So the father was not that learned that the father of Chasam Sefer should know who's right, whether the grandfather or the little boy. So he slapped him in public and he said, how do you have the chutzpah? At the age of 13, you disagree with your grandfather. So his Rebbe was there. He had two big rabbeim when he was born and brought up in Frankfurt. And all of the tshuvas, he always signs, Moshe HaKotem in Frankfurt. He always wanted to go back to Germany. He always was interested in going back, but it never turned out. So the two rabbeim that he had, one was Rav Nosson Adler, who lived in Frankfurt for a while until they chased him out of town. Why did they chase him out of town? Because the Yekis demand that everyone should be follow the Minhogim. And Rav Nosson Adler decided he wants to learn how to pronounce Hebrew with Havara Sfardit, and he wanted to daven Nusach Sfardit. Havara Sfardit, with Nusach Sfardit, it's two strikes against you. So they chased him out of town. He used to do a lot of things different. So that was the one Rebbe that he had. He learned by him. And then the rabbi in Frankfurt happened to be the Haflor, the Pinchas HaLevi Ish Horovitz. Haflor is the name of the Sefer that he wrote on Ksubis. He wrote a Sefer on Kiddushin. That's called the Makne. And the name Haflor. And this name Haflor, the name of the Sefer on Ksubis, as Rashi Tevis, Rav Pinchas Levi Ish Horovitz. So these were the two rabbeim that he had in Frankfurt. And in one of the tshuvas, he describes the way by the Yekis in Frankfurt, they have a practice when the Kohanim Duchan on Yontif and the Levium wash the hands of the Kohanim, said they have a washing station to the right and to the left of the chazan, all the way up in front of the shul. And everybody washes with the Levium, wash the hands of the Kohanim. So the rabbi in the shul was a lady, and Nanado was the Kohen. So everyone watched the way the lady would wash her hands before looking at each other. A big two breaks. The Hafloa, usually some Hafloa was a real chassid. He learned by the Mezichanged, the Mezichanged was the talent of the Baal Shem. So the Hafoa was the brother of Rebbe Reb Shmuel from Nicholsburg. And the Bumalas, it's usually someone published a couple of years ago, all that he's denying, he's trying to deny that that law was not a rule. It's not correct, but that's what was always assumed for many years. They say that he did what with Tfilah Chamoyd.
No,
but
no.
But in Frankfurt and by the Germans, they wear Tfilah with a bracha on Chalamoyd. So he had to wear Tfilah. So they say that he had a pair of Tfilah that had been purchased and bought him. And that was a special pair of Tfilah that he used for Chamoyd. Everybody touched his Tfilah. And after he passed away, then someone opened up the bottom to see what was special about it. They found what was special about it. So it's interesting, both the Reb Shmuel from Nicholsburg, or later went to Nicholsburg, and after both brothers, they were Chassidus, and they both got the Rabbonis by the Yekkes. Reb Shmuel went to Nicholsburg. Nicholsburg, I think, is in Austria or something like that. And then after went to Frankfurt, but it's very unusual. By the real Yekkes. So his Rav Nosson Adler daven Nusach Svard, Nusach Harid, and the Haflor also daven Nusach Harid. Some said he writes about it in one of the books, both of them daven Nusach Harid. So these were the two main people who had their opinion. So in the book, Kutam Shulosh, they were about
Rebbe, I'm sorry, but we can't hear you now at all. You've become mute. Your mic is muted.
Yeah, we can't hear you, anybody. I can hear the gentleman speaking, but I don't hear the rabbi anymore.
Okay, where did I leave off?
It was about 5 minutes ago that the audio got very choppy.
Oi.
I was able to hear you before, but okay. Whenever you're ready, I'm ready to listen to you.
We'll try again. Okay. Again, when Chassam Sofer was bar mitzvah, he said his own Dvar Torah, and he disagreed with something that his ancestor, that his grandfather, wrote in the Sefer Kosher Shuas on the Zikin, and the father slapped him. And right. Rebbe happened to be there. Nosson Adler was the main Rebbe that he had. He was also a Talmud of the Haflor, but his main Rebbe was Reb Nosson Adler. So Reb Nosson Adler said to the father, "Why did you slap him? He's right. The grandfather is wrong. The little kid knows what he's talking about." So he told the young boy, Reb Nosson Adler told the Chassam Sofer as a young child, "You better leave your father's home, because the only way to develop in learning is to ask kashas. You have a difficult Rambam, you have a difficult Gemara, you have a difficult Rashi, Tais or something. If every time you're going to ask Kakashi, your father's going to slap you, so never get to learn anything. That's the only way to advance in learning, is by asking Kashi." So at the age of 13, he left his father's home and he moved in with his Rebbe, Nosson Adler. Nosson Adler had a daughter, but that's not why he had to move in. He didn't marry the daughter. The daughter married someone else. So this is already very strange, that he left his father's home at the age of 13. And then when the Yekkes chased Nosson Adler out of Frankfurt, so the Talmud went along with him, and Chassam Sofer, from one of the Chuvas, writes, for a while, his Rebbe Reb Nosson Adler, when he was wandering around in Europe in different places, so for a while, he was on the outskirts of Prague. At that time, the Nativ Yehuda was the mid-1700s, late-1700s. Nadi Behuda was the rabbi in Prague, and Reb Nosson Adler was across the bridge from Prague, and I don't remember the whole story, but he wouldn't go into Prague, so he would send the Chassam Sofer as a teenager to bring letters to the Nadi Behuda. They corresponded with each other, and the Chassam Sofer as a teenager was the go-between. He would bring the letters back and forth across the bridge. There is a famous opinion of the Ravid. The Rambam writes that if a Kohen, there's a question, the Rambam, how to read the Gemara in Nazir. The Gemara in Nazir talks about the prohibition of the Nazir to become Tamei Lameis, and the Dinim applied to a Kohen also. A Kohen is not allowed to become Tamei Lameis unless it's one of the seven relatives, or if it's a Meis Mitzvah. So the Rambam understood in the Gemara the following din, that even if a Kohen went to a funeral that same morning, and he was Matami Lameis, Behetar of the Issa, it doesn't make a difference. The Kohen is a Tami Mace. And then he lets go from the Mace. And then in the afternoon of the same day, he touches another Mace. Even though he's not really being Moshev Tumal to Masai, he still gets Malkus. And the writer disagrees. And he says, he thinks that there's no Malkus in that case. Since the Kohen is Tami already, if the Kohen would touch another Mace tomorrow, then he would need Hazal Shlish and Shvi. Starting from tomorrow, then he's Moshev Tumal to Masai. He's adding to an additional day. But if he touches the second mace on the same day, he's not really prolonging the Mea Tume. So then the Ravid says that there's no Malkus. So it's a question, how do we derive it? The Ravid says the one who thinks there's Malkus, the Rambam, thinks that there's Malkus. The burden of proof is on the Rambam. Let him prove that there's Malkus. It's a question, how do we read the Gemara? So the Ravid is questionable. Did the Ravid mean to say that it's permissible? It's mutter to be mitame because the Kohen is not being Moshev Tumal to Masai. Or did he mean it's prohibited, but there's no Malkus because you only give Malkus if you violate an Avera Bishlei Musa. If you violate, let's say, Chatz Yishir. If you eat a little bit of treifus, not a full kazayas, so Chatz Yishir is an Issa Deraisa, but you don't get Malkus. Maybe over here, the Ravid says, the one who thinks, the Rambam is the one who thinks that there's Malkus, the burden of proof is on him. I'm not so convinced that there's Malkus. Maybe he agrees that it's usur. He just thinks that it's not an Avera Bishlei Musa. So many assumed for many years that the writer meant to say that it's mutter. So the Navi Yehuda has comments that are printed on the side of the page in the big Yerideya. It's called the Dogal Mervava. So the Dogal Mervava, he writes that they brought to my attention that the Ravid in the Tshuvas, in the Sefer Tmim Deim, it's a collection of Tshuvas by the Ravid. The Ravid says that it is Osir, it just said that there's no Malkus. So the Chasam Sofer writes, I was the one who brought that to his attention. My Rebbe Ram Nosson Adler was on the other side of the river from Prague, and there was a conversation going between Ram Nosson Adler and the Navi Behuda, and I was the go-between, and I was the one who showed him that Tmim Bay. It's interesting that in this Sefer Chutam Shulash, where they have all the family stories, so they have the following story. The Chasam Sofer, as a teenager, spent quite a while with Rav Nosson Adler before his bar mitzvah and after his bar mitzvah. Someone at one time, Rav Nosson Adler recommended that he travel to go learn by another Gadol in the city Rechnitz. The Gadol wrote this Sefer, I think his name was Rav Wolf Boskovich. He wrote a Sefer, Or Chodosh. It's a Pilpul Sefer on Psochim. Member Rav Soloveitchik once mentioned the Kasha from the Or Chodesh, and he and Psochem, and he gave a whole teretz on the Kasha. So I went and I bought an Or Chodesh. Then I realized the whole Sefer is all pilpul. He only liked that one Kasha. He didn't like the rest of the Sefer. So the Chasam Sefer traveled to Rechnitz, and he didn't enjoy the shiurim at all of the Or Chodesh. And then he came back to where he was, wherever his Rebbe was before, He always felt bad. He always felt hurt. Why did the Rebbe send me on a wild goose chase that I should go learn in Rechnitz by the Yor Gadol if I didn't enjoy his learning at all? So many years later, after the Rebbe passed away, Ram Nosson Adler passed away, Nachsam Sefer was already a grown man. He used to paskan a lot of Dine Torah. So there was a Torah between Tintu Balabatim in Hungary in Presburg about some merchandise. One of them sold merchandise to the other one, and it was faulty merchandise. So it was a shiloh and mekach tos. If you sell, I sell you a bushel of apples, and half the apples are rotten. One or two apples are rotten, so you can't say it's mekach tos. But if half the apples are rotten, so then it's a shiloh and mekach tos. So there was a din Torah, and some sefer gave a psak. And it turned out, and he signed on the psak. He signed what the din was. And he was not aware of the fact. Chasam Sofer claimed he was not aware of the fact that the merchandise was brought into the country illegally. It was against the law to bring it in. It was the middle of a war and some kind of explosive material. He didn't even know what the material was. They just heard that they already gave the psak. So they wanted to put him in prison because they assumed that he was in cahoots with these gangsters. And he said he's innocent. He wasn't aware at all that it was against the law. He didn't know what the merchandise was. So they were really going to put him in prison. So when you have a court, so they always have the police in the court to make sure that nobody starts a riot. So there was the policeman never pipe up in the middle. So the policeman asked the judge, "Your Honor, could I ask a question?" So the judge was stunned. So he said, "Yeah, what do you want to ask?" He said, "I want to ask the defendant the question." He said, "Ask." So he asks him, "Did you ever live in Rechnitz?" So he says, "Yes, 30, 40 years earlier, he lived in Rechnitz for a few weeks, for 2 weeks or so. And then he left." So he said, "Your Honor, the man is innocent. He cannot be guilty. Why?" So the policeman says, "I used to be a policeman in Rechnitz. And my post, I used to stand in front of the synagogue. And all of the children, the Jewish children and the non-Jewish children, all the children used to make fun of me. No one ever had respect for the police or for the government. The only one to have respect was this little boy. When he was a youngster, when he was a young teenager, every morning he would say, 'Good morning, officer,' with such derech eretz on his way to the synagogue. I can't believe that now that he's an adult and he's such a prominent rabbi, now he's going to go violate in the machus. He's going to be involved in an illegal sale." So he was off the hook. The Chassam Sofer was off the hook. So then he understood why the Rebbe sent him to go to Rechnitz. That was going to save him later in life. It's interesting that Chassam Sofer was very strong on this idea of Dina de Malchus, that you have to follow, you have to be mechaber the government, and you have to follow the laws of the land, Dina de Malchus, Dina. And in the drushes of the Chassam Sofer ala Torah, they have the following very interesting comment. The Gemara says in Maseches Rosh Hashanah that it was on Rosh Hashanah that Yosef was freed from prison. We say the Shir Shal Yom for Thursday. We say Bekes Aliyach Agenu, Edus B'Yosef Samar B'Teis Al Eretz Mitzrayim. So Bekes Aliyach Agenu is a reference to Rosh Hashanah, the Chag Shachodesh Miskasabo, and Yosef got freed from the prison on Rosh Hashanah. So the Rishonim bothered with the Kasha. The Pasuk says that when he freed him from prison, he had to come to Paro to interpret his dreams. So it says, "Vaygalach vaychalev sim loisof," that he shaved, because when he was in prison, they didn't let him take a haircut, they didn't let him shave. So he dressed up nicely, the Kovid Melech. So the Balei HaTosfos ask on that Pasuk, how can it be vaychalev? The Gemara tells us that Kiyam Avraham Avinu kolot harukula shalei nitno. The others, Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, we assume. The Gemara only says about Avram. But we assume probably all the others and probably the Shvatim observed Shabbos and Yom Tov even before the mitzvahs were given. So how does he take a shave on Rosh Hashanah? You're not allowed to take a haircut on Yom Tov. So the Chassam Sofer says the others volunteering the mitzvahs, Kodesh Matan Torah, that was like a minig. That was a midas chasidus. Then the Torah wasn't given yet, so they're not obligated to. And showing kavod to the malchus, that's a real din. So whenever the Chassam Sofer answers, whenever there's an outright conflict between a real din and a midas chasidus, then you have to observe the din. You don't observe the midas chasidus. It's here, kavod amalchus is a real din that you have to shave and take a haircut before you visit the palace of the king. So the kavod amalchus takes precedence over the Midas Chassidus of volunteering to observe Rosh Hashanah before Matan Torah. It's a very important idea. Other poskim have this as well. Rabbi Gusman, Zichron Levracha, was a famous Rosh Yeshiva after the war. He ran away from the Nazis. He ran to Siberia. And then later he came to America. He was in Eretz Yisrael. So he has in one of his Sraim on Kiddushin, the end of the Sefer on Kiddushin, he shows a Rambam in Hilchos Korban Pesach like that shows the Kesef Mishnah interprets in the Rambam that whenever there's a conflict between a minig and a real din, then you have to observe the din. You can't observe the minig when it's in contradiction to a real din. That's the shaila. Let's say we people have a minig not to take a shave, not to take a haircut. In the 3 weeks, it's not a real din, it's a minig. But when it comes Shabbos, it's a real din. You have to dress up nicely to cover Shabbos. So what are you doing when there's a conflict between a real din and a minig? So many hold that you have to observe the din. You don't observe the minute. And it's also has such a chuga interprets a gemara like that in in the beginning of Brachas, that the Gemara says in the beginning of Brachas, Haroga lova lebeis haknesses, that one is in the practice of coming to shul, he always davens tefillah b'tzibur, and one day he doesn't come, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu shel olav, the Ribbono shel Olam will ask, where is Pliny? So then it'll be investigated. So if Pliny went l'dvar mitzvah, so it's okay, but if Pliny went l'dvar hashus, he went for another purpose, not a dvar mitzvah, and he violated his meaning of davening tefillah b'tzibur all the time, so then from heaven they'll punish him. So then it's even interprets, what do you mean? Harogal lova lebeis haknesses. He has a minik toiv. He points out that tefillah b'tzibur is not really a chiyuv. It's a strong recommendation to daven tefillah b'tzibur. The Gemara says you stand a much better chance of having your prayers answered if you daven tefillah b'tzibur than if you daven on your own. So the whole purpose of davening is that the prayer should be answered. So it makes sense you should daven tefillah b'tzibur. So if a person is in the habit of always davening tefillah b'tzibur, so if one observes a minhag toiv three times in a row, even if he never says it b'peh, it becomes binding mitam neder midirabban. The Gemara says minhag toiv is binding mitam neder midirabban. It's not a neder min haTorah because you need levati b'sosam. You have to pronounce it with your lips. But midirabban is binding mitam neder. So what if a person has the minhag toiv and then he has to go to dvar mitzvah to something else and he has to violate the minhag toiv? So the Gemara says, if he's going with Dvar Mitzvah, so then he won't be punished because you have a conflict between a real din and a minhag toiv, so then you have to observe the real din. But if he's going with Dvar Hashus, then he'll be punished because he's violating the minhag toiv that he accepted upon himself. That's how the Netziv interprets that Gemara. So it's basically the same as what Rav Gusman pointed out from the Kesem Mishnah in Hilchus Korban Pesach. So that's what the Chasam Sofer interpreted, that Yosef by Galach on Rosh Hashanah. Why? Because there was a conflict between a real din, Kavod HaMelech is a real din, and volunteering to observe Rosh Hashanah before Matan Torah was only a Midas Chasidus. And whenever there's a conflict between a real din and a Midas Chasidus, you have to observe the real din. The Chasam Sofer writes in more than one tshuva. In several places he writes, he was so close with his Rebbe, he left his parents' home right after his bar mitzvah party, and he was so close to his Rebbe, he watched everything the Rebbe did. He writes an expression, Azazo yodi mitoch yodi. He always saw everything, and he writes that he knows that his Rebbe Rav Nosson Adler had trees that were orla, trees or bushes where the peris were growing within the first 3 years. So peris of orla arosa b'achila osa b'hanoa, and the Mishnah seems to say that there's a mitzvah to burn it. So he says he never saw his Rebbe burn the Orla. So he's wondering why. Then he has another question that none of the Moni HaMitzvah, those who, the Rambam, the Bahag, and before and after, those who count the Taryag Mitzvahs, there's all literature on the topic of the Taryag Mitzvahs. Nobody counts this as one of the 613 Mitzvahs to burn the Orla. Why not? If the Gemara learns it from Sukkim. So they're very good reasons why. But the Chasam Sefer says he thinks the answer is that there never was such a mitzvah. I never saw my Rebbe burn the Orla. It cannot be that he burnt the Orla and I wasn't watching. I was there for years with the Rebbe. I saw everything all day and all night. So he comes up with a whopper of a chiddush. He thinks that the minhag is shofar doesn't mean that it's a mitzvah to burn the Orla in the klerakim. It just means if you burn it, Afron will be muta, the yeshes will be muta. But he says you're not mechuyev to burn it. So he says since it's optional, you're not mechuyev to. So that's why it's not counted as a mitzvah in the minyan on mitzvahs. Those who learned in yeshivas know that Rav Chaim Soloveitchik did not understand like that. Rav Chaim said that it's a mitzvah to burn it, and the reason why it's also anoah, because if you'll get anoah before you burn it, it's considered a bitla mitzvah, even though ultimately you're going to burn it tomorrow, but getting anoah before you burn it is considered as if you're a mevatla mitzvah of burning it. And after it's already burnt, then the yesh is amuta because the whole is anoah is because it's bidl mitzvasai. But once you did a mitzvah, nasis mitzvasai, so then getting anoah won't pose any problem. So this whole pshat that the Chamsa, remember once one of the big rabbonim in Flatbush was asking Rabbi Gifter, we were the family simcha together, so he was asking Rabbi Gifter, how can the Chamsa say that it's against Rabbi Chaim? So Rabbi Gifter said, the Chamsa has a right to disagree with Rabbi Chaim, but it's a whole different understanding of what's going on. So this is all because his Rebbe never burnt the Orla. Others say that the din that Orla is b'sheifa only Orla in Eretz Yisrael, Orla and Chutzlorz. That's how the Ragat Shava says, along the lines of Rab Chaim, that Orla b'Eretzol and Orla b'Chutzlorz are different dinim, not the same din. Chasam Sofer writes that also, he watched his Rebbe all the time. He says his Rebbe used to write two prusbols, one before the Shemitah year begins and one toward the end of the Shemitah year, and he gives a whole explanation why. He quotes a lot when he watched his Rebbe. In this biography written by the grandson, the Chutam Shulash, so he writes, the Chasam Sofer really wanted to go back to visit his mother. His mother was known as a big tzaddikus. People out of the MSA go to the cemetery in Frankfurt to be mispallowed by the mother's kever. I don't know where the father's buried, but they didn't tell us anybody davens by the father's kever. They done by the mother's kever. They say they have in their storybooks. I don't think this is in the Chutam Shulash, but I read it in English in a different book that... Chasam Sofer was born on a Friday afternoon, late in the afternoon, and the minig in Frankfurt used to be that there would be Mekabel Shabbos early. And his mother didn't want that there should be Chil Shabbos in the delivery, so she sent a message to the rabbi in Frankfurt, could he please make an exception to the rule that this Friday evening they should not daven early, so there won't be any Chil Shabbos, because she's going to have the baby soon. So they're going to daven Maariv early, they'll be Mekabel Shabbos early. So he felt that she was a big tzaddikus, and he said, this baby's going to be something special, and that what they made an exception to the rule. They were not Mekabel Shabbos early that week. So that's what they quote. The mother was known as a big tzaddik. So he wanted there for years. He wanted to go back to visit the mother, wanted to go back to visit the family, to visit all of his friends from his childhood. But they say from the day that he understood the significance of Tefillah B'Tzibur, he never missed Tefillah B'Tzibur all of his life. And if he would go back to Frankfurt, he would only be able not to miss Tefillah B'Tzibur if he'd take a minion with him. And he wasn't prepared to take 10 men along with him to go visit his mother in Frankfurt. So he never visited his mother. He never missed Tefillah B'Tzibur. That's pretty unusual. In the book, they have this story that Chasam Sofer used to write a lot of tshuvas. And when he already had grown children, and he would write the tshuva and leave it on the dining room table, leave it on the piano, whatever. And one of his sons, the one who later on became the Chasam Sofer, one of his sons would send it out in the mail to the one to whom it was intended. So the son would always read it in advance. And if he thought that it wasn't ready for distribution yet, he wouldn't insult the father to say a comment. He would just leave it there on the table. He wouldn't mail it. And the father would ask him, how come you didn't mail it? And then he would strike up a conversation with him. Maybe you should touch it up. Maybe you should delete something. Maybe you should add something. So on occasion, he left the letter there for a week or two. The father asked, how come you didn't send the letter out? So the son said, the one who sent the shaila is a big Talmid Chacham. And he quoted a lot of Gemaras about a question in Halacha, and you really didn't give him any strong rayas. You just think, I think the din is like this, and you brought a fluky raya that doesn't really prove the point. You have to write something stronger, because this person is a big Talmid Chacham. So the Chasam Sofer gave him a response, and he said, look here, in every generation, he feels that the Ribbono Shel Olam gives the mafteach ha-psak. He gives the key to psak halacha to one outstanding Talmid Chacham. He felt that he was the one in his generation. He had the Mafteach HaPsak. And every Talmid Chacham, every big Talmid Chacham always has an intuitive feeling what he thinks the din is. And then they check it up. Briefly, they look through the Gemaras and Shulchan Aruch to see if there are any contradictions. But they're not really looking through to see if the Psak is right. Intuitively, they feel in their heart what the din is. So he says, my initial instinctive reaction was that this is the din. I don't need any rice. That was my initial reaction. That's what Rabbi Soloveitchik used to say, that the Gemara comes and the Pasuk Torah Zivulon Moshe Morosha, Aturki Morosha, Elam Urasa. All the Jewish men have a marriage, Erisin, with the Torah. But he said, unusual, big Talmid HaChachamim don't only have a marriage and Erisin, they have an Isuin. Part of this, he delivered the talk when his uncle, Rabbi Belvila, passed away. So he said, Hesped in the Yeshiva and Lampet Auditorium. So he said, his uncle had Isuin with the Torah. Said in Erisin, the couple is married, but they really don't know each other that well. In Nisuin, that's when you say Yishtik Gufa and Balki Yishta. Erisin, the Gemara says, you don't say Yishtik Gufa. the wife is a korb, but if the nisun, then the wife is not a korb, then it's a baldova. The right of cheat and pagin and dibura, that the husband and the wife are considered baldova, is only if the nisun. That's what it says in the Gemara. So Rav Soloveitchik said he's already living with his wife so many years, he already knows, and his wife knows in advance what his reaction will be to any issue that will come up, and he knows what his wife's reaction will be. So he says a real big pesik, a real big Talmud Chacham, when the shaila comes up, has an intuitive feeling. He has an intuition what the din should be. And then he just checks up to see that his intuition is not incorrect. So that's basically what the Chassam Sofer says as well. A very interesting line. He was for the second wife that the Chassam Sofer had was the daughter of Rabbi Kiveger. So on one occasion, Rabbi Kiveger, because the Chassam Sofer was brought up in Frankfurt, so he knew the Rothschild family. Anshel Rothschild was a very wealthy banker, and he used to lend money to all the kings and all the dukes and all the princes. So Rabbi Kiveger encouraged Chassam Sofer, his son-in-law, that he should influence Rothschild, that Rothschild should speak to the Mufti, the one who is in charge of the Makam HaMikdash. They should allow the Jews to go there to bring the Korban Pesach. All the other Korbanos, everybody's Tomei, so you can't bring Korbanos in a state of Tumah unless it's a Korban Tzibur. And all the other Korbanos Tzibur, you have to collect Machzor Shekel money. So Machzor Shekel, there's so many Reformed Jews, they're not going to give any money. So the other Korbanos is not Shach, but Korban Pesach doesn't come from Machzor Shekel money. So that's why Rabbi Kiveger encouraged, he corresponded with the Chassam Sofer. Chassam Sofer should try to encourage the wealthy Rothschild, who is the banker, and he lends money to the Mufti in Yerushalayim, that he should let the Jewish people bring the Korban Pesach there. So he sent them back a letter, "My dear father-in-law, obviously you don't know what's going on in the world. The Mufti doesn't even let Jews walk near the Makam HaMikdash. Forget about bringing Korbanos. Nothing to discuss, not a chance in the world. They're not going to let us bring any Korbanos." But that's a famous correspondence that they had. Rabbi Kiveger had many Talmidim. Rabbi Kiveger lived in Germany also. Rabbi Kiveger had many Talmidim. One of them was Rabbi Tzvi Hirsch Kalischer, who was known for his one of the Zionist leaders. So Rabbi Tzvi Hirsch Kalischer wrote a whole book, Rishas Tzion, about the possibility of putting up money, building a Beis HaMikdash, and bringing a Korbanos Bizman HaZeh. And he quotes what he considered were all the issues, all the halachic issues, and he solves all the issues. The problem is, he was never there in Eretz Yisrael, so he didn't realize there's a mosque in the Makam HaMikdash, that they won't let us go near the Makam HaMikdash, nothing to discuss. But he thought that he solved all halachic issues. Let's see, so Frank has a whole sefer, I think it's called Mikdash Melech, all about the additional issues that Tzvi Hirsch Kalischer doesn't raise in his sefer. So one of the issues that Tzvi Hirsch Kalischer raises is that it says in Sefer Ezra, when they came back after the 7 years of Golus Babylon, and they built the Beis HaMikdash and they wanted to bring Karbanos, so they required the Kohen Miuchas. Just because my father used to duchen and he got the first aliyah, and I duchen and I get the first aliyah, that's called Kohani Chazokin. The Kohani Miyuchas means you have a Ksab Yichas that lists off generation after generation going back to somebody who is Makro Korbanos in the Beis HaMikdash, the Bais Rishon, 7 year gap in between Bais Rishon and Bais Sheni, that's called the Kohani Miyuchas. So Ezra said, we have to check any Kohen who wants to be Makro Korbanos in the Bais Sheni has to be a Kohen Miyuchas. If he's only Kohani Chazok, we don't allow him to be Makro Korbanos. So how can you find how many Kohani Miyuchasim we have today? They say a few, a Rappaport family, there aren't so many people from the Rappaport family, Kohani Miyuchasim, he won't be able to bring Korbanos. They have to stay up all day and all night to take care of everything, 7 days a week, 24 hours a day. It's impossible. So the Tzvi Hirsch Kalischer came up with a big Kiddush. That was a big breakthrough. In his time, it was assumed, you look in the Pesach Tshuva, in the beginning of Eben Ezra, it was assumed that Kohani Chazok are not permitted to be Makar Korbanos because they're Safek Kohanim. Safek Kohanim. So if the Safek Kohanim, let's say a Chalutza is not permitted to marry a Kohen, that's only with the Rabbanah. So the Gemara says, a Grusha is not allowed to marry a Kohen, that's a Dim in our Torah. Chalutza is only a Dim with the Rabbanah. So what if a woman is a Safek Chalutza? So we sometimes, we don't always say like this, we sometimes say Safik Drabbana Lakula. So the Gemara says we'll make it a little bit by the Safik Chalutz. If the Kohen married already, we wouldn't allow Lechatchila, but B'dyavad, if the Kohen already married a Chalutz, we would not insist that they have to get to us because, strictly speaking, Safik Drabbana Lakula. So what if the woman is a Vada Chalutz, but the Kohen is a Safik Kohen? There should also be room to be Mekel. So for many generations, they were assuming from a few centuries before, they were assuming that Kohanim is manazeh, not allowed to be makrav karbonis, because Kohanim Chazok are just Safik Kohanim. Tzvi Yishkalish came up with a new breakthrough in the Chiddush. He thinks that that's not true. The Kohanim avade Kohanim, but it was a chumrah midrabbanan that Ezra introduced at that time. They never had it before the days of Ezra. No pasuk anywhere else. Ezra introduced a new chumrah. You need a Kohanim miyuchas. We wouldn't allow Kohanim Chazok to be makrav karbonis, but it's not a Safik deraisa. So there's no room to be mekel on a Safik, on a chalutza to a Kohanim Bizman Hazeh. There's no room to be mekel. And then he said, and this chumra that Ezra introduced, that we wouldn't permit Kohanim Chazok to be makrav karbonis, so Rav Tzvi Yishkalish says yesterday, Hasara Nosenes, logic indicates that it's only if you'll be able to bring karbonis without that kohen. You have other kohanim or kohanim. You have enough kohanim or kohanim yuchasim to run the Beis HaMikdash. But if observance of this chum is going to make it impossible to bring karbonis, so then the pashtun says that you don't have the chum at all. So he sent a copy of the sefer to his Rebbe. Tzvi Yishkalish sent a copy of the sefer Drisha Sion to Rebbe Kivegi. He was masking. The Rebbe Kivega sent a copy of the Sefer to his son, Lord Nachsam Sefer, he was masking. So that was a big turning point in Psak Halacha. From that time on, it was assumed, like Rebbe Kivega, Rebbe Tzvi Yishkalish, the Talmud of Rebbe Kivega, Nachsam Sefer, Kohanim today, Avada Kohanim. How can they say this of the Kohanim? When they do Chen, they say a Brocha, Shekadoshan, Rebbe Kivishos, Shalara. And when they do Pidyon HaBen, they say a Brocha. What do you mean, Kisofi Kohanim? So how do they say a Brocha? The Vade Kohanim, it's just a chumim de Rabbanan that you don't permit them to be makar of Karbanis. It's interesting the quote that the Chassam Sofer gave Shir every single day of the year except for Tisha B'Av, and on Yom Kippur he used to give a Shir also on the Seder HaVoida. The Hungarians say that at that time there were three big Rabbanim with the name Moshe. One was the Chassam Sofer, Moshe Sofer, and one was the Maram Shik, who was the Talmud of the Chassam Sofer, and one was the Yismach Moshe. The Yismach Moshe was the first Hasidish Rebbe in Hungary. His name was Teitelbaum. The Satmar Rebbe was a descendant from the Yismach Moshe. There is a tshuva in the Chassam Sofer's collection of tshuvas to the Yismach Moshe, and because his name is Teitelbaum means a tree that grows dates. So in the introduction to the letter, the Chassam Sofer writes, a melitza lechvod the tzaddik hatoma yifrach, the tzaddik who grows like a teitelbaum, like a date tree. And that's why in all the different satmar shtiblach all over the world, they have that pasuk, tzaddik hatoma yifrach, and they have a picture of a date tree on the wall. So by the Hungarians, they say that there were three Rabban and Moshe in the same generation, the Chassam Sofer, Marshik, and the Yismach Moshe. So the Chassam Sofer galant and gekent. He learned and he knew the dinim. And the Marshik galant and nish gekent. He learned and he did know. Taken to Hungarians, considered the Chassam Sofer the highest level of learning. As it is today, in the generation we live today, the Maram Shik's style of learning is closer, is the yeshivish style. People who learn yeshiva in any yeshiva today would enjoy the Maram Shik's style much more than the Chassam Sofer. Chassam Sofer a lot of times has to give an arbitrary psak, has to draw the line somewhere. So the yeshiva guys don't go for that. Yeshiva talmidim like svaras. The Maram Shik is closer to our style of learning. But that's how the Hungarians say, that the Chassam Sofer learned and he knew, Maram Shik learned and he didn't know, and the Yismach Moshe nishgalant and erkigent. Yismach Moshe is as Chassidus and Chumash, but he wrote a tshuva sefer Heshiv Moshe. So they say he was always davening and doing Kabbalah and doing Chassidus and Zachen, and nonetheless he wasn't learning and he knew the dinim anyway. That's the way the Hungarians set it up. The Hungarians considered that the Chassam Sofer was the greatest Goyen of all. They said that the Vilna Goyen was almost as great as the Chassam Sofer. That's the way they presented. The Chassam Sofer is known. He lived at the beginning of the reform movement. After he passed away, the Muhammad, the war between the reform and the Orthodox came much worse. And his son, the Chassam Sofer, with his Talmud, the Maamshik, were the ones that were leading the battle against the reform. But during his lifetime, it began, and he took the major step of declaring the period Hakehillus, that the Austrit, that in Frankfurt, they followed that the Rabbi Hirsch followed that position, that the Orthodox shouldn't have anything at all to do with the reform. Rabbi Chaim Moiser wrote a letter to the Sri Yesh. Sri Yesh raised an issue that in Eastern Europe, they never, in Lithuania, they never really accepted the idea of Pirud Akilus. In Vilna, they always worked together with the reform. Everybody worked together. And in Germany and Hungary, they had the Pirud Akihilus. So when the reform movement in the 1930s, reform got worse than before. So this Rida Yesh Weinberg corresponded with Chaim Moiser, and maybe now even those from Vilna, even those from Eastern Europe, should accept this idea of Pirud Akihilus. Because the reform are mamish destroying the Jewish religion. So Rabbi Chaim Moiser wrote back a response. From day number one, it was terrible, and still they didn't go for Pirud Akilus, and he thought Rabbi Chaim Moiser's opinion was that the whole issue of Pirud Akilus was not a halachic issue. Many disagreed with him. He felt it was not a halachic issue, it was a psychological question. Where, how will we preserve the religious observance of Abba Labatim if they're going to be buddy-buddy, if they're going to be friendly with the Reformed Jews? So we better have a Pirud Akilus to maintain religious observance. But it wasn't a halachic issue. So that's, many say, they wonder if Rabbi Saul Salanta would have been there. Maybe he would have not had this, he would have not taken this step of having Pirud Akilus. Maybe he would have worked with them, and the whole history would have been different. That's, but he's known for his position of the Pirud Akehilas. One of the recurrent expressions that appears, one of the recurrent themes that appears in the Tshuvas of the Chassam Sofer is Chodosh Osem Min HaTorah. He's not allowed to change anything. He even says it with respect to Chodosh. Chodosh is the new tour that was planted after Pesach, so before next Pesach, that's called Chodosh. So the meaning, the practice always was in Europe, all Jews were Nekel on Chodosh. And not anyone who wants to be a machmor chodesh at the Chassam Sofer said chodesh osim min haTorah. He's not allowed to introduce a chumrah. He said it to be matar chodesh. So that's one of his recurrent themes. Chodesh osim min haTorah. You shouldn't change anything. Leave everything the way it is. And it's interesting. In one place, the Mishnah Berurah quotes on the Chassam Sofer about Amir Liakum on Erev Shabbos. There is a rule raised the question. The Gemara says you're not allowed to do Amir Liakum on Shabbos. What if we do the Amir Liakum on Erev Shabbos? Is it still osir? Because Rashi and Avodah Zarah writes that Amir Liakum is prohibited because of the pasuk Dabar Dover. Shelo yehi dibucha shel Shabbos ki dibucha shel chol. So if the dibur was not done on Shabbos, if the dibur was done before, maybe it's mutter. So the Gemara Zura brings the right that it's not so. It's osir. But if you do the dibur on Shabbos, then it's a double isir. So the Chassam Sofer and the Tshuva has a tzad to be made called Amira Damira. If this is a discussion, a Chavis Yor, another person have, I ask one goy to ask another goy to do a malacha for me. So what if it's Amira Damira and Erev Shabbos B'Makam Mitzvah? Is there room to be Mekel? So Chassam Sofer is Mekel. So the Mishnah Berurah quotes that, and he's not happy about it. So he makes fun of it. So he says it's a Dover Chodesh, because the Chassam Sofer always says Chodesh Osim and HaTorah. So he says, well, how can you be Mat Amira Damira B'Makam Mitzvah from Erev Shabbos? It's a Dover Chodesh and Chodesh Osim and HaTorah. There's a siman in Yoridei, I think it's siman Reish Dalet, where the Shulchan Aruch quotes the position of the Ran and the Dorim Daf Pei, b'shem the Balei HaTosfos, that if you a person observes Amidas Chasidus, if a person observes it, if he has in mind Beli Neder, he says Beli Neder, so then it's not binding. But if he doesn't say, then whenever you observe Amidas Chasidus, it becomes binding mid the Rabbanan mitam Neder. That's what it says in the Gemara and Daf Tezvav in the Dorim. That the minig is binding mitam neder is mid rabban. So if a person observed the minig toiv a few times, And then he wants to discontinue, so he has to have a Hataras Nedar. He shouldn't say, I have Charata that I accepted a Minig Taif. Then he loses all the Schar. He was observing it. What he should say is, have Charata that I should have said Bli Ner. You don't say, I have Charata on the Minig Taif. He doesn't have Charata on the Minig Taif. That's called Toya Al Rishonis. Has Charata that he did mitzvahs. So you say, you have Charata that you forgot to say Bli Ner. So the Ischechuba and Simon Reshu Dalit, the whole Simon, very small Simon, that talks about this din, Aminik Toivis Bani Mitam Neder, Midirabbanon, quotes the Chasam Sofer in a Tshuva, where he writes that since Minig is Mitam Neder, and Neder is a din der Isis, so Minig, a Sofig Minig is Lechumer. Sofig, the Rabbanon is Lekula, but a Sofig and a Minig is Lechumer. How can a Sofig and a Minig be Lechumer? There are 25 other Tshuvas in the Chasam Sofer. But he said there's a din der Isis is chomer, then a din der Rabbanon is less chomer, then a minig is less chomer than a din der Rabbanon. Minig is not even a din mit Rabbanon, it's lower than a din der Rabbanon. All of a sudden now he says that a minig is mitam neder, so it's a din der Isis. It's against the Gemara. The Gemara said the Farish that minig is binding mitam neder is only with the Rabbanon, it's not another. So a lot has been written on that. The pashtus is that tshuva was probably just a guzma because the reform first started to pick on menhagim. First, they did away with this. After some sefer passed away, first they did away with Kol Nidre, because the goyim make fun of the Jews that they're dishonest in business. They commit to deliver and to pay money, and then they break their word because they make Kol Nidre, they make Hataras Nedarim, so they're not obligated to live up to their commitments. So the Reform said, we're giving a pischam pet to the goyim to make fun of us. So they wanted to do away. They did away with Kol Nidre. Then they decided that nobody knows Aramaic anyway. Why should we say two? You can Purkan. So they decided they're going to leave out one of the two. Then the next convention that they had over the Reformed rabbis, they decided we don't understand any Yukim Purkan. So they did away with the second Yukim Purkan. And that's what Shaddal was, a Jewish thinker, a religious Jewish thinker. And he was making fun of the Reform. So he said first they did away with the first Yukim Purkan, and then they fulfilled the Pasuk. And they did it where they wipe up the second Yukim Purkan also. Absolutely, we always quote that line from Shaddal. When you start chiseling away a minhagim, so first you do a little bit, then you chisel more. Then the Reform didn't like the minute that the chasim was a kittel on the chup. He asked, "Lo yom amisa, is getting married, such a happy day. The goyim are going to laugh at us." So they did away with that. They were first picking a minhag. So that's what the Chasam Sofer said. That minig is a very serious thing. A minig is a din derais. I mean, under the circumstances, a minig is shouldn't be treated so lightly. We shouldn't allow anyone to do away with the minhagim. Before the Chasam Sofer was appointed the rabbi in Pressburg in Hungary, I don't know if it was the one immediately before him or maybe the one before him was Rav Shulam Migra. He was known as Great Goyen. He came from the city Tisminitz. He was known as Amishon Tisminitz. So on his deathbed, he was a rabbi in Pressburg. And on his deathbed, he kept on muttering, he wishes the din would be like Reb Meir. And no one knew what he was talking about. Then he passed away. So when they were when the board of the city was interviewing candidates for the rabbanis, so they would ask him different things. Like today, they ask him, what about the women speaking in shul? And a bas mitzvah celebration, whatever, all the hot topics. So they asked all the candidates all the topics that were hot at that time. And then they would ask also a question, what do you think Rav Shulam Migra meant when he says he wishes the din would be like Rav Meir? Which Rav Meir? When Rav Meir? What was he talking about? So everyone gave some wild pshat. So when they asked the Chasam Sofer, so he thought for a moment and he said, obvious what? He was a goyses, Rav Shulam Migra was a goyses. And the Gemara says, I wrote goyses in Lemisa. Most of the Gosasim will die. Miut Gosasim L'chaim. Rav Meir is the one who's Chayish L'miuta. So he said he wishes the din would be like Rav Meir. They're Chayish L'miuta. So he won't die. Because if you're Chayish L'miuta, so you don't worry about Rav Gosasim L'misa. So they thought that was the correct pshat. And they appointed him as the rabbi of Pressburg. And then one of the first things that he had to do was to check the Erev in town before the first Shabbos. So when he went around to check the air, there was an issue. I remember there used to be a professor who taught Jewish history in the yeshiva. He, as a child, was brought up before the war. He was brought up in Pressburg. And then as an adult, he moved, after the war, he moved to America. So he said he remembered as a child where the Erev was, and there was one location. They said, that's where the Chassam Sofer changed the Erev. Rabbi Shlomo Migra had the Erev over there. It was one way, then he changed it. So if you look in the Tshuvas of the Chassam Sofer, he tells you what happened. It was an issue of Achurei HaKoysel. Not that complicated, but I'm not going to describe it now. So many Poskim say that it's no good. So the Chassam Sofer felt that Achurei HaKoysel is no good. So when he checked the Erev, the first Shabbos, they showed him the Erev. So he said, who made the Erev like that? So they said, Rabbi Shulam Tismanitzer, the previous rabbi, Rabbi Shulam Migra. So he writes in his Shulis that he told the Balabatim, Kedai Hulis Macholov, Afila Shaloi Bishasatrak, that they can carry in the Erev. And then you have every tshuva has a date, and you see that later. He changed it, he corrected it, that it should be the way he thought. So the Chazanish asks, it's a very strange. Talmid Chachamim sometimes take a position, and then they realize they made a mistake, and they back out. Here he backed out twice. First he thought that it's no good. Then he said, Rabbi Shlomo Migra did it. Then he said, it is good. Then he said again, it's no good. He backed out twice, just shows that you're irresponsible. To back out once, that's called intellectual honesty. You realize you made a mistake and you correct it in public. But to back out twice doesn't make sense. So the Pashtus is, he didn't back out twice. The Chassam Sofer held that he used to stick to his opinions. A lot of things he decided when he was a very young man in the beginning of his career and learning, and he didn't change his mind later. He rarely changed his mind. So he felt that it's no good, but he doesn't have to fix the Erev. They have a right. The din is halakha d'Rav Meikel be'Erev. The Balabatim have a right. He just moved in. This is the first Shabbos he was there. They have a right to rely on the previous rabbi. But after he's living there for a year, and they're asking him all the shilas, and everybody knows, oh, the Chassam Sofer lives there. That's the Chassam Sofer's Erev. Then he had to correct it to make it satisfy his opinions. But the first Shabbos, he didn't feel that he's mechuyev to check. So he didn't let his children, he wouldn't carry, he wouldn't let his children carry. But the father about a batim, they can rely, Rabbi Shulam Migra. And then he corrected it. The Chassam Sofer has a tshuva where they asked the mashal in Hilchos Avelos. So he answers a year later. It was, he needed the shayla a year before. What does it help a year later? So he writes in the tshuva, the minig is that we don't learn, it's not a siman toif to learn Hilchos Avelos. So you only learn Hilchos Avelos when one is in a state of Avelos. A year later, he says, the shayla is not the gay anymore. A year later, he learned Hilchos Avelos when he was in Avelos. So he writes a tshuva then. So remember, they told us that when Rav Soloveitchik gave shurim in the yeshiva, he used to give shurim in Hilchos Avelos. Rav Mendel Zaks, he was very familiar with a lot of achrenim. Rav Zaks was the son-in-law of the Chafetz Chaim. He used to be the boichin in the yeshiva. He was the one who gave smicha to Dr. Belkin. He gave smicha in Radin. He used to give the smichas in Radin. So Rav Mendel Zaks was upset by Rav Soloveitchik was giving shurim in Hilchos Avelos. Chassam Sofer in the Tshuvas writes that the meaning is you don't give a shiur on Avelos. So they say that Rav Soloveitchik said that in Volozhin they used to learn brachas from brachas to nida. They gave shiur on everything. You look in the Meraim Mesoda. He tells you the dates. These the Meraim Mesoda are the volumes, three volumes of the shiur that the Nitziv gave in Volozhin. And you see, they learned approximately a blot a day, and they went right to the Kabbalah and they gave shiur on everything. There wasn't anything they didn't give a shiur on. And then Rav Soloveitchik also mentioned the Sefer Hasidim. Sefer Hasidim says that just like there's a special mitzvah, the bury a mace mitzvah, even a kohen gadol and even a nazir is not allowed to be metame to the craving, but you are metame to a mace mitzvah. So there are certain prokim in Shas that should be treated like a mace mitzvah. So he says, El Megalchen, the dinam of Aravelus, nobody ever learns. And kochim, nobody ever learns. So these Sefer Hasidim writes that these prokhim are like a mace mitzvah, and it's more of a mitzvah. It's a special mitzvah to learn those prokhim. So Rav Soloveitchik didn't listen to the recommendation of Rav Mendel Zaks. It's interesting. Chassam Sofer at one point published the Chidush Rimigash, I think, on Masechet Shavuos from a manuscript. So he wanted very much to get a haskama because he used to be a cherim. Years before there was a cherim, you're not allowed to, the Avad Arba Rotsa had a cherim, no one's allowed to print a sefer without the haskama from the Avad Arba Rotsa. So people didn't want to give a haskama. What do you mean, a haskama on Yerim Gash? the Rebbe Migash doesn't need a Haskam. So Chassam Sofer insisted, no, even if I'm printing a Ksav Yad from a Rishon, the Rishon is bigger than all the Rabbanim and the generation, still, I need a Haskam that it's approved now that I have the right to print it. So one of the Rabbanim gave him Haskama, or Matcha Bennett, he was like the chief rabbi of the whole region. So he thanked him very much, and that letter was included in the Tshuvas of the Chassam Sefer. He thinks that it's more correct is that you should really never print the Sefer without any Haskama. Chassam Sefer has a famous tzavod that he left over that some of the Talmidim printed with commentaries on it. I think the one who printed it was Rav Hillel Kalamayer, Rav Hillel Lichtenstein. He was a Hungarian tzaddik, and his son-in-law was Rabbi Akiva Schlesinger, who moved there. It's so later that his son-in-law was the one who blew shofar and Rosh Hashanah Shacholi is Bishabbos, and he was a controversial figure. He was a colorful figure. Around 20 years ago, they printed a collection of tshuvas by this Rabbi Akiva Schlesinger, the son-in-law of Rav Hillel Kalamayer. So they're very nice tshuvas. Now that we have Mishnah Berurah, you don't need, he doesn't add anything that doesn't say in Mishnah Berurah, he didn't have a Shari Tshuva. Most of what he says appears in the Shari Tshuva, and the Mishnah Berurah has everything. So you don't really need the tshuvas. I don't know why they reprinted them. But so this, I think the tzavua of the Chassam Sofer was printed by, I think, by his father-in-law, that they had a copy of the handwritten tzavua. So the tzavah is interesting. The one line there, he doesn't permit his descendants to have their wives wear shetlin. They have to cover their hair datka with a cloth, a hat, a tichel, something, not with a shetlin. At that time, he used to take the shetlin, he used to shave off the hair from a dead body. And that's a question. A mace is also bano. What about seah mace? Is the hair from a mace also bano? So the Maritz Chais also was a contemporary of the Chassam Sofer, they corresponded also. So he has a tshuva about that, and the Shalosh Tshuvos Maritz Chais, he has a tshuva. There's a Tosis in Bava Kamma in the first parak that says, HaMeis is Mutar Bano, but other Rishonim had a different gears in the Gemara, the end of the first parak in Erech, and that says just the reverse. That's an issue. And then the Shalosh is what it may say, Akamar Rosh Bano, he used to shave off the goyim, he used to shave off the hair from a non-Jewish woman who had died. So it's a double shadow where the Meisei Akamar Rasamano and where the Seah HaMeisei Rasamano. Then he also has in the Tzavua a famous line. He encourages his descendants to learn Chumash Tanach Im Rashi Chumash Im Ramban. He was very strong at Chumash Ramban. Many of his tshuvas and many of his chidushim and the Mesichtas are based on Ramban's Alatur. He was very strong in the Ramban's Midayik Lishinus. But that's he's known for his comments on the Ramban. There are many things in halacha that we do today that are based on psukim of the Chassam Sofer. One of the most famous is regarding a mikveh. You can't just, if you have a bor, you can't just turn on the faucet and assume that the water goes in and it fills it up and you have them so. We are always concerned that maybe the pipes that bring the water from a reservoir to the mikveh, maybe the pipes were made in such a way that it's maim shuvim. Maybe the water will be maim shuvim. So you have to have hashoka. So you can't have the same water there. You have every day women are going to use the mikvahs. You have to change the water every day. Change water every day. So you have to make hashoka. You have to always take new water from the tap, from the reservoir. Umchoshish, that it's maim shuvim, so you have to make hashoka. How do you make hashoka? So you always have one bar next to another bar, and there's a pipe connecting the two, and it's opening the width of the pipe is kishva feres anod. So that makes a chibur mikvah. So the Chassam Sofer came up with a chiddush that's not good enough. That the din is if you have water that's there are four things in it, four categories of things in the whole wide world that are mekabel tuma, but the mekalim ochlam and mashkim. So other mekalim have tarab in mikveh under certain circumstances, and Ochel and Mamashim do not have tarb and mikveh. The one exception to the rule is Mayim. If water is Tameh, then if you make Ashoka, then the water becomes Toha. Why is that? But there's no tarb and mikveh. Mayim is a Mashke. So Rashi writes in several places in the Gemara, Rashi always writes, it's Midin Zriya. Midin Zriya is like this. If you have an apple that's Tameh, plant the apple in the ground and it takes root, So if it's mechuba lekarka, it takes root. So then, even though it had tumah before you planted it, once you plant it, once you have zriya, it becomes tohar. So the Gemara learns that from a pasuk, "Zareya mayim al pnei chutzah," pasuk in Navi, that if you have water that's tumah and you pour it into a mikveh, it's not that the mikveh, not that tefillah the mikveh helps for water that's tumah. Tefillah in the mikveh doesn't help for ochem or mashkim, only for other mekelim. But it's midin zriya. If you take water that's tummy, and you throw it into a river, you throw it into a mikveh, it's considered as if it's zorua, as if it took root in the ground. So some sefer says if you want to plant something in the ground, let's say you want to plant a seed, that it should grow. So you have to have offer on top and on bottom and on all four sides. You have to have offer all over the place. You can't just have a potato or an apple sitting on the ground, or sitting next to the ground. In order that it should be called zriya, you have to have the mayim shuvim come from the tap. You have to have a bor, a mikveh, and then the mayim shuvim or the mayim tmeim have to come in the middle of the mikveh. You have water on top, one on the bottom, one on all the four sides. That's what he called zriya. He coined a new expression, because since hashoka works midin zriya, that's what Rashi always writes. And zriya, when you plant something, you have to have offer on all the directions. So it's not enough if the two mikvahs are one next to the other. You have to have zriya. So Moshe Feinstein was not a Hungarian. So he says it's against all the Mishnah. He says, Beferish, all the Mishnah, so the Tosefta is one born next to the other is perfectly okay. He said, if you do Zriya, it's also good, but there's nothing, there's no halacha that has to be Zriya. And all the Hungarians are makbed on that. They'll dafke do Zriya. And now many of the mikvahs are made, the experts, a lot of the experts on mikvahs are Hungarian rabbis. And that's why the mikvahs are so expensive, because they bring in all the Hungarian chumis that it cost everything cost five times as much as it ought to cost. So this is one of the things that Chassam Seif is famous for, the zriya. In fact, so what you do is like this: you have a bor full of water, and you turn on the faucet, and you have a hose, and the water comes out of the hose in the middle of the mikveh goes so high, and the hose lets out the water in the middle of the mikveh, so you have zriya. And then it reaches a certain point in the bor, and then it overflows. You have a hole, and it overflows into the next bor in the next room, and people are tov there. But then at the end of the night, after everyone's tov, you empty out all the water there, and you do again as zriya for tomorrow night. The women go to mikveh at night, so you go to do it again as zriya. So after you do zriya a few times, you're not going to have any of the original water that you had in the bor. You collect the water in the wintertime when it rains. So the water goes down into this bor. So you have a baim so of mayim kshirim. And then you're going to do zriya. You're going to turn on the faucet, the tap, and the water is going to go through a hose. And the hose, the opening of the hose is going to come in the middle of the mikvah. It's going to fill up the mikvah higher, 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 till it reaches the point where there's a hole, and it's going to overflow to the next mikvah. If you do it a few times, you're not going to have 40 so anymore. You won't even have 21 so of the 40 so. So the Rambam and the Raivit are both machmer on that. The Rambam and Mishnah Torah, and the Raivit and the Balei HaNefesh, they're both machmer. The Mishnah has a din, nosan so, and not also. The Mishnah has a din by May Paris. You have to be tevel in water. If you tevel in May Paris, it's no good. Rochet says, sorry about mine, you have to have water. So let's say you have white wine. So I pour, have a mikveh that has 40 saw, I pour in a saw of white wine, everything's still white, and then I take out a saw of water, then I pour another saw of wine, then I take out a saw of water. So since the rove of the mikveh was water, I started off with 40 saw of water, even though I poured in wine, the mikveh is still good, and it didn't change the color. Shini mara pasul, the mikveh didn't change the color. But then I take out a saw of water, so I really no longer have 40 saw, you only have 39 saw of water, one saw of may peris. But since the May Paris was bottled berayv at the time that I had 40 so the mikveh is good. The Mishnah says only good arubai. If you do nasan soa and not soa more than 20 times, then you don't even have 20 of the original kosher soa, so it's no good. So the Rambam and the Rabbi both have a chumra that this din nasan soa and not soa even applies not only by May Paris, even applies by Maim Shu'uvim. It doesn't make any sense. Once you do Hashoka Maim Shum, it's not Maim Shum anymore. It just became Maim Kshirim. So the Kes Mishnah says, Midin Marasai. So the Rambam and the Rabban hold that that's not acceptable. But in Hungary, there used to be Mekalanda. Hungary and Galicia used to be Machmer for the Hasam Sofer's opinion that you need Zriya. And that if you need Zriya, so then open up the faucet and the hose lets the water into this mikveh. Then it goes higher, higher till it flows over to the next bar. Then you do it the next night. You do it 3-4 times. You're no longer going to have 21 so of the original mikveh and the original mikveh. So it's not going to be good. So most of the Rishonim disagree with the Rambam and the Rabbah. So the question is, you're introducing a chumrah from the Chazam Sofer, but it's the expense of violating the Shita of the Rambam and the Rabbah. So they asked one of the Gedolim, one of the Galatani Gedolim about this. So he said, the Minchas Yitzchak has a tshuva about this. He quotes, one of the Galatani Gedolim said, the Chazam Sofer's mikvah obviously is kosher, because if it would be possible, then the children would be Ben Hanida. The Gemara tells us that Ben Anida is going to be a chatzuf. And the children were tzaddikim, they were not chatzufim. So obviously the mikveh is kosher. But in the Olam Yisrael Yoinim, the Rambam, who is in the Olam Elyon, gives his own shir, and he will not allow those children to attend this shir, because the Bnei Anida. So that's a question, what did he say? He says it is good, b'harai, that they're not chatzuvim. Then he says it's no good. The Rambam doesn't allow those children to attend the shir. So the Minchas Yitzchak has a whole shuvah about that. What did this Galatiana Goyen mean to say? Today, they don't make it like the Chazam Sofer, like they used to, just to have one bor. Now they have one bor where they collect the water from the rainwater on top, and then they do Zriya, and then they have another bor where they do Hashok sideways, the way it was always done, until the Chazam Sofer came on the scene. So at the end of the day, they're really relying on Hashoke without the Zriya. But this is a carryover. This one, the Chazam Sofer. Then Mishnah Berurah in Hilchos Yom Kippur talks about a person has to eat on Yom Kippur. So the Gemara says, Machilamos akala kalchila. If you can save the person's life with violating less of an iser, so why should you have him violate a morchom medike iser? So eating a chotzi shir is an iser. Chotzi shir is asim in Torah, but there's no chorus. If you eat a shir shalem, then there's an iser chorus. So she really have pachas mikishir. So that's what they usually say. So you eat a little bit, less than the shir, then you wait a few minutes. Then you eat a little bit more, you wait a few minutes. How long do you have to wait? Kedei achila is pras. How long is that? So the Chazam Sofer says 9 minutes. The Mishnah Berurah quotes from the Chazam Sofer. Many later poskim disagree in a big way. They say it's nowhere near 9 minutes, way less than 9 minutes. But that's the Mishnah Berurah quoted the Chazam Sofer that it's 9 minutes. We have a practice when we do Pidyon HaBen, or when we do Pidyon Ma'aser Sheni, Paris from Meretz, so we do Pidyon Ma'aser Sheni. So we use coins, we don't use paper money. This is because the Chazam Sofer raised the issue that maybe paper money doesn't have the status of keset, maybe has the status of shtar, because it only has representative value. There's a din ein nishboim al shtoris. If there's a din Torah and shtar, then there's no shvur there, right? So the maximum you can ever have is going to be a shvur de rabbanon. Like on karka, you only have a shvur de rabbanon. So the Chazam Sofer suggests maybe there's a difference. When you're talking about pidyon ma'aser sheni, pidyon haben, you're talking about a mitzvah in ordem lamakom. So there, we don't recognize the paper money as kesef. We say that is shtaris. But maybe this pek ein nishboim al shtaris, maybe the since that's in the area of ordem lachaveiroi, so maybe there we should recognize the paper money. So this is a big discussion in poskim. The Maisa we machmanet. Nobody today does pidyon ma'aser sheni, nor pidyon haben on paper money, but it's very questionable whether it's really correct or not. But that comes from the Chazam Sofer. The Acharonim also, the Pesach Shuvah quotes, Chazam Sofer set up, there's a machlekes in Shulchan Aruch, the Rivash, is of the opinion that pidyon haben can only be done by the father of the baby, or when the child becomes bar mitzvah, he can do his own pidyon haben. Bris Milah, if the father doesn't do the Bris Milah on his child, then the Bezin has an obligation to. If Bezin doesn't do it, then Kol Yisrael have an obligation to do it. If nobody did the Bris Milah, so then when the child becomes bar mitzvah, he's obligated to see to it. He does his own Bris Milah. So on the same page in the Gemara, they say pidyon haben, the father should do the pidyon haben. If the father didn't do it, then the child does it when he becomes bar mitzvah. Why didn't they say that the Bezdin should do it, and Bezdin doesn't do, Kol Yisrael should do, and Kol Yisrael doesn't do, then the child should do. So the Rivash, the Ramah quotes in Hilchos Pidyon HaBen, there's only one Siman, and here it is, Siman Shinhei. So the Ramah quotes the Rivash, Pidyon HaBen cannot be done by the Acherim. It has to be done only by the person himself. I think it's the Chasam Sofer who says the reason why, because Pidyon HaBen is Zechel and Makas Becharis, and Makas Becharis says, Ani Hashem Ani V'loi HaShaliach. So just like he can't have a Shaliach, so that's like the Rebbeinu Shlom didn't have a Shaliach for Makas Becharis, so we shouldn't have a Shaliach to do the Pidyon HaBen for us. It has to be done either by the father or by the child when the child becomes Bar Mitzvah. So the Shach disagrees with that, and the Shach quotes earlier Paskim, who also disagree, and he thinks that there's nothing wrong. You can do, other people can do Pidyon HaBen, there's nothing wrong. So the Chasam Sofer introduced the following system. When the child is, let's say, the child is a Yosem, the father died, but the father's not Jewish, the mother's Jewish, the father's not Jewish, so the father can't do Pidyon HaBen. So you have to wait till the child is Bar Mitzvah. So the Chasam Sofer set up this system. When the child is 31 days old, the Bezdin should do the Pidyon HaBen B'li Bracha, and when the child becomes Bar Mitzvah, he should repeat again to do the Pidyon HaBen B'li Bracha. In Lithuania, the minig was not so. That was in Hungary and in Galicia, they followed the Chasam Sofer. In Lithuania, they followed the Shach. That's all. The Shach lived in Vilna, and the Aruch HaShulchan writes like that. Rav Soloveitchik said he remembered like that. They didn't follow this Hungarian Chumra in both directions, just followed the Shach. The Chasam Sofer has a tshuva where he, which is quoted by the later Poskim. A fellow was a religious Jew. They used to call upon him to sign ksubas at weddings and to sign gittin. They used to sign Pliny ben Pliny, his name and his father's name. One fine day, he marries his aunt. He marries his father's sister. They said to him, "Are you crazy? It's an isekoris. How can you marry your aunt?" He says, "That man is not my father. He adopted me when I was a little child. He's not related. They're not a blood relative at all." So the shaila was, is he allowed us to continue signing like that on the ksubis and on the gittin, Pliny ben Pliny, the man is not his father. Maybe you have to write Pliny ben Pliny hamagadlo or hamamtso. So the Chasam Sofer says it's not necessary because we have the pasuk in the Chumash that says serach bas osher. And the Targum Munklis writes serach bas itas osher. Serach was not the daughter of osher. Serach was the daughter of osher's wife. But osher raised her. So that's why it's okay. Unless you're concerned that it'll be a kilkel, let's say, in our generation. I remember there was a case, a woman lost her husband at the age of 95. They never had any children, but they had adopted two boys. So when she was 95 years old, the husband died, and the husband had a brother. So one of the children was had smicha from RJJ. And he raised the issue that the mother should have chalitza. So the mother said, "What, are you crazy? I had two children." She didn't have the children. She adopted the children. She didn't have any children with her husband, never had any children. So if there's a concern that if you're going to write your name, Pliny ben Pliny, people are going to think that the Pliny's wife doesn't need chalitza, then you better not write like that. But Dayan Grosnas used to be in London, has a tshuva. He quotes the Chasam Sofer. And he says there really isn't a concern because when it comes to an issue of chalitza, the rabbanim will be consulting and not tell him that you do need chalitza. So that is followed. A lot of people follow that when someone adopts a child, the child calls himself up to the Torah. If the adoptive father is a kohen, the child who's adopted does become a kohen or a levi. But if it's not a question of kohen or levi, he doesn't get a yerusha either. Yerusha is only if he's a blood relative, if he's a child. But he can call himself Pliny ben Pliny, even though it doesn't say hamagadlo hamamtso, because that's what it says in the Chumash, serach bas osher. Chasam Sofer, in one of the tshuvos, writes, his opinion is that reciting Hallel on Chanukah is a chiyuv d'oraisa. The Gemara makes a whole kavod chomer. It's a chiyuv d'oraisa. So Chasam Sofer says Kal v'chomer is one of the midrash ha'tarin in Reshes Pem. So you have to follow a Kal v'chomer min ha'tor. It's based on that Chasam Sofer that one of the prominent rabbanim, Rav Meshulam Roth, was a member of the Rabbanut. He was a big goyin in Europe, but he never had a big rabbanus because they always belonged to the Mizrahi. and all the big positions were taken by the Agudah Rabbanim. But when after the war, when he came, he survived, and he came to Eretz Yisrael, they appointed him in the Rabbanut. So he wrote a whole tshuva about reciting Halal on Yom Ha'atzma'ut. He said, you don't need a takana. The Rabbanut doesn't have the authority to make a takana. But you don't need a takana. The Chassam Sofer says the reciting Halal Chanukah is a din d'oraisa. So reciting Halal on Yom Ha'atzma'ut should also be a din d'oraisa. So the Rav Moshe Tzvi Neria wrote a whole tshuva, a Dvar Torah, disagreeing with that. So he quotes the Chassam Sofer. He quotes the Netziv, has in his commentary on the Shultis, he disagrees with this Chassam Sofer. So he starts out by saying, Hagoyim v'hatzadik, Chassam Sofer. Usually doesn't refer to Hagoyim v'hatzadik, but he was going to disagree with him. So when you disagree, so you have to give big respect to the person you're disagreeing with. So he says, Hagoyim v'hatzadik, Chassam Sofer writes that Halal Chanukah is deraisa. So he says it's against the Gemara. The Talmidim of the Chassam Sofer is the Kasha. The Gemara Brocha is Daf Yudalit. So the Farish that Halal Chanukah is only Midirabbanim. It's not Benat Torah. So the Talmidim of the Chassam Sofer give a whole shot why the Chassam Sofer is not against the Gemara. But the Pashta says that Halal is only deraisa on Chanukah, the first year on Chanukah when they won the war. But every following year, Zechel and Nes, Halal B'shas HaNes is deraisa. Halal Zechel and Nes, like the Netziv said, that you need a takana the Rabbanon for. So if the Rabbanut is not authorized to make any takana, so they never made a takana here. So during the lifetime of the Chassam Sofer, he used to keep a diary. He used to write a little bit of history in the diary, what was going on. He used to write Divrei Torah in the diary. A lot of the Divrei Torah are comments on Ramban's Ala Torah. And different things. So there was some Austro-Prussian war that was going on. And the city Pressburg was under attack. And he writes a little bit about that. So there was a suggestion that maybe we should be Goyes of Tainus, we should be Mispalo, that the war should end. So the Chassam Sofer writes in his Yoman, in his diary, he doesn't think that's permissible to daven to the Ribbon Shalom that the war should end, because the Gemara says that Melchamas are Aschalta de Geula. So Rashi says on that Gemara, Melchamas, if there's a war between the Jews and the Arabs, who's going to be in control of Eretz Yisrael? And the Jews win the war. So that's an Aschalta de Geula. So the Chassam Sofer ignores the Rashi. The Gemara is in two places, in Megillah and Sanhedrin. So he ignores the Rashi. He says he understood all wars in the world are Aschalta de Geula, and you're not allowed to slow down the process of Geula. So this was quoted years later by the Minkatcher. The Minkatcher lived through the First World War. So there was a suggestion at that time that the Rabbanim should be Goyes of Tainus, that the war should end. So he says, Goyes of Tainus, they call Rab Soloveitchik, says Rab Chaim said the same. To be Goyes HaTainus Tzibur is only if you think that there's a chance that there'll be Tshuvas HaTzibur, that Tzibur will do Tshuva. If it doesn't look like there's a chance that Tzibur will do Tshuva, so it's not, it doesn't make sense to be Goyes HaTainus Tzibur. So that's what the Munkacher writes, but with his twist. He says, there's not a chance that the Tzibur is going to do Tshuva, because the only Avera that he sees is Zionism. That was from a whole 613 mitzvahs. The main Avera is Zionism. And he says, the secular Zionists are never going to do any tshuva. The Mizrahi is worse than the secular Zionists. They made Zionism into a mitzvah. In the eyes of the Munkach is the biggest Avera, and they made it a mitzvah. And the Aguda is worse than the Mizrahi, because the Aguda says that they're anti-Zionists, and they're not. They're also supporting Zionism. And he said, we don't have to do tshuva. We didn't do any Averas. The only Avera in the world is Zionism. He was the main anti-Zionist. And then he says, it doesn't make sense to be Goyes of Tainus, because the Tzibur, you don't have a Tainus Tzibur, but there's no chance that the Tzibur is going to do Tshuva. And then he adds on, and to be mispalel that the war should stop, the Gemara says, he understood the Gemara, all Mechamas in the world are Aschalta de Geula, you're not allowed to slow down the Geula process. I imagine the Minkatcher with the Minchas Aloza, with the Chamsa, would be the first one to say that the Mechemet HaShechrur was an Aschalta de Geula. For all wars in the world, that for sure is Aschalta de Geula. And you're not allowed to slow down the process of Geula. Very interesting. The Maritz Chayes had a correspondence with the Chassam Sofer. Several of the European countries at that time adopted a law. They still have the laws that you're not allowed to bury anyone until 72 days, until 72 hours go by after the doctor signed a death certificate. Because they found out that the doctors were signing a death certificate and the people were still alive. They were burying people alive. So the question was, we have a mitzvah, b'yom ha'tikbren, a kavod tikbren, b'yom ha'tikbren, you have to bury the mace the same day. And maybe we should go along with the din of the Malchusa. Maybe we should go along with the din of the Malchusa, because the Gemara has in different places that there is a concern that maybe we'll think the person is dead and is really still alive. So the Maritz Chayis corresponded with the Chassam Sofer, maybe we should go along. So, and he quoted in his correspondence, he quoted from the Mar in the Buchim. So you read the letter that Chassam Sofer responded to him. The Chassam Sofer never published any of the tshuvas while he was alive. It was only after he passed away that the family published the tshuvas. And when they printed it, they left out the name of the Maritz Chayis. He hardly ever leaves out the name. Rare, very rare, less than 10, maybe less than 5 tshuvas. But he leaves out the name of the person because it's going to be embarrassing. So here he left out the name because in the middle of the response to the Maritz Chayis, he writes, are you an apikoros or something that you don't believe that they had a tradition when you buried mace? But the Maritz Chayis was very proud of his correspondence with the Chassam Sofer. So he printed a special sefer, my correspondence with the Chassam Sofer. He has his letter and he has the Chassam Sofer's response, word for word, the way it appears in the Tshuvas of the Chassam Sofer. And paragraph by paragraph, it's interesting. Every so often, there's a tshuva from the Chassam Sofer. We don't know what in the world he's talking about because he never writes over the shaila. He just gives you an answer. And you see from this correspondence between the Maritz Chayis and the Chassam Sofer, there's paragraph by paragraph, he corresponds to every paragraph of what the Maritz Chayis wrote him. So he writes, among other things, in that tshuva, he says that some of the people in our generation talk about brain death. And they said the brain death is considered dead based on the Gemara. The Gemara says in the end of Yuma, based on the pasuk in Parshas Noach, all the people who were able to breathe were drowned in the Mabel. So the Gemara says if a person is dead and he's not breathing for 15 minutes, we assume he's dead because breathing determines that the person is dead. So some of the Rabbanim in our generation say that since the brainstem controls the breathing, so if the brainstem is dead and the person is not able to breathe, even though he can breathe by a respirator, but he's not breathing on his own, that's considered dead. So the Chassam Sofer happens to write that comment that the Gemara makes on that pasuk, he thinks it's only an asmachta. And the Maritz Chayis quoted from the Rambam in Mor Nebuchim that the Rambam quotes Galen. Galen was a doctor, a Greek doctor, a Roman doctor, I don't know. So Galen has claims that there was a person who died and he wasn't breathing for 3 days and then he came to. After 3 days, he started breathing. So Maritz Chayis said, if the Rambam quotes medical history, that such a thing can exist, that the person is not breathing, how can we bury a person just because not breathing for 15, 20 minutes? Maybe it's like this fellow who wasn't breathing for 3 days and then he came to later on. So the Chassam Sofer said, that's ridiculous. How often did such a thing happen? A suffix, sakonis nefashis. That's not a suffix. Echad me'ene elef alfi alofim. One chance in a million that such a thing is going to happen. That's not called a suffix, sakonis nefashis. And then the Chassam Sofer also writes, the Tanoim didn't know medicine. All the medical information that they had, they learned from the Goyisha doctors. But on this, they must have had a tradition. From when the Rebbe Shalom told Moshe Rabbeinu the din of Kabbatik Bena Bayamahu, so he must have told him when he's not breathing for 15, 20 minutes, that's a simon that he's dead. That's not the definition of death, that's a simon that he's dead. So the Chassam Sofer has quite a few interesting points here. One of the Rabbanim just published a book about 5-10 years ago where he writes, anybody who says that the Rabbanim and the Gemara didn't have a tradition on the medical facts, that they picked it up from the Goyish doctors is an apikoros. The Chassam Sofer says like that. He said the Rabbanim didn't know on their own medicine. They heard everything from the Goyish doctors. Anyway, the kids, the Chassam Sofer has a lot of chidushim in halacha. It was a very original thinker. There's a lot of original chidushim, many of which are being observed Maisim B'chol Yom, the mikveh, many others. He's known for many things. Lynette, next week we'll have to pick a different gadol and discuss. A good tovach, everyone.
Thank you,
thank you very much. Good night.